The pelvis and the perineum. Okay, so posterior abdominal wall, as you look at it, the outline says boundaries, relations, and composition. Because it's all these three things kind of are, you know, when you look at the contents, the composition and or what is it made of, you can see here you have in the posterior abdominal wall, its boundaries as well as some of its contents are there. That means the posterior abdominal wall muscles serve as the boundaries as well as contents. Okay, that is what I mean by composition. And relations we will just, you know, go through. And boundaries you already know. What are the boundaries? What are the boundaries of the abdominal wall, the abdomen? What are the boundaries of the abdomen? Superiorly? The diaphragm. Our posterior relations you may not remember, but posterior relations go all the way back. What did we have? All the way back. Vertebrae. Lumbar vertebrae. L1 to L5. So, lumbar vertebral bodies, L1 to L5, and the intervertebral discs. And so that means, you know, that is the boundaries as you look at it. And then, when you look at it, the relations. Composition? Okay, let's finish the composition also. Composition, we have the posterior abdominal wall muscles, plus, what else do we have there? Nerves and arteries and veins. Nerves, arteries and veins. Because we have done everything else. We have done the kidneys and the suprarenal glands, and we have done all the other fissura. Now we have, you know, in the posterior abdominal wall, when we come there, we have the muscles, the nerves, and the vessels. So we will just, you know, do those and, you know, move on. But as we come to do those, now the relations, before we come to do the fascia, the relations. The relations are important for especially this muscle, psoas major muscle. As you look at the psoas major muscle, this is minor and this is psoas major. Psoas major muscle. When you look at a whole lot of viscera in the abdomen, you would note that a lot of the viscera are related to the psoas major muscle. That means if you have appendicitis, that means if you have any kidney problems, that means if you have any problems with the cecum, that means you have any problems with any of these abdominal, you know, viscera, then you moving the psoas major muscle is going to give you problems. So that is why a lot of times you can do the psoas sign. You can try to test, you know, the psoas sign. And that means in living anatomy, we will go over the testing of the psoas muscle, psoas sign, you know, for appendicitis and for some other, you know, a whole lot of things that you can test the psoas sign and you can see if the person has any problems with the moving of the psoas major, you know, muscle. And so that is the relationship is, you know, very important. Even pancreatic problems, as you look at it, you know, high up it comes. Even pancreatic problems and a whole lot of problems that are associated with, you know, structures, you know, can be, you know, what you call figured out by testing the psoas major muscle. That means the psoas sign. That means is the psoas sign positive or negative? So you can do that. But not right now. Not here. We will do it in living anatomy. All right? And so those are the relations and the most important relations about in relation to the psoas major muscle. That means one of the posterior abdominal wall muscles. Okay. Now, the fascia of the posterior abdominal wall. When we look at the fascia, wherever we go, you know we have fascia. And there is the fascia that is in front of all of these muscles here. Like when we go back and look at this one, you can see the muscles much better here. So what we do is, even though that fascia is a continuous layer of fascia, anterior to all these muscles, but we call them psoas fascia. We'll call them fascia iliaca, You may remember fascia iliaca. Do you remember fascia iliaca? Don't say fat, no. Somebody would remember. And the fascia iliaca, I'll give you a minute to remember. And so, then when it comes over the quadratus lumborum, it is the quadratus lumborum fascia. Or right over here is the psoas fascia, but it's a continuous layer. Like the fascia lara, then crural fascia, remember it's a continuous layer. And so here we have the same fascia iliaca. Fascia iliaca, where have you seen, heard fascia iliaca? Femoral sheath, the posterior layer of the femoral sheath, fascia iliaca. Or the iliac fascia that slips right down, you know, into the femoral triangle, fascia iliaca. So that fascia iliaca is right over here, over the iliacus muscle here, and then as you hear is the psoas, and so the fascia iliaca comes right down, right in here is where you have seen, you know, that as the posterior layer of the femoral sheath. And so anyways, and then of course you may remember you have the thickened part of that fascia, the quadratus lumborum fascia thickened here, the psoas major fascia thickened here, forming what? Medial and lateral arcuate ligaments. Medial and lateral arcuate ligaments. What takes origin from the medial and lateral arcuate ligaments? What takes origin from there? The diaphragm. The diaphragm takes origin from there. And so that is the fascia. If we come from that fascia, anterior, from the fascia iliaca, psoas major fascia, what structure do you come across? Prior peritoneum. So all these structures are retroperitoneal. All these structures are, even the kidneys, remember? The kidneys and the suprarenals, the abdominal aorta, IVC, they are all retroperitoneal, okay? And then there is also this part of this fascia participates in the formation of the thoracolumbar fascia. You may remember the thoracolumbar fascia. You may remember we colored the thoracolumbar fascia, remember? So part of that thoracolumbar fascia, you have, you know, this fascia, the fascia that is, you know, transverse abdominis and the fascia that is going from here is also associated with, I'd like you to please refer to the anterior abdominal wall, you know, muscle, anterior abdominal wall class or lecture there, that is where you would see that where we have colored, you know, the thoracolumbar fascia. Okay, so that is the fascia of the abdomen. Then we come to the muscles of the abdomen. Muscles of the abdomen, there is an origin insertion as we go any place, and innovation, table 2.14, 5th edition, 2.12, 4th edition, gives you all of the origins, insertions of all those muscles there. And I also have, in the current packet, I also have included some of these as you look at it, you know, here. You can color it if you like. This diagram is a very good one. It's a good one for coloring almost everything. So psoas major, psoas minor, iliacus, quadratus lumborum. All these muscles, when you look at it here, you have this diagram someplace, that means in the coloring packages that I know of. And so here, let's look at it here. Here you have the quadratus lumborum, where is it? So here, right over here, laterally, quadratus lumborum is right over here. And in blue color, so there you have the thickened lateral arcuate ligament. And then, here you have, so you can easily see when you color it like that, you can easily see, you know, this one, the psoas major. And so right over here is the psoas major. You already know the insertion of the psoas major muscle. Where does the psoas major muscle insert? The lesser trochanter, the lesser trochanter. Where does the, let me put right on top here of the psoas major in green color, where does the psoas minor muscle, that is here, psoas minor muscle, that is here in green color, where does the psoas minor muscle insert? That we haven't looked. Remember, we waited, you know, until we came to that psoas minor. So here is the psoas minor muscle. Where is it inserting? Does it come all the way down into the femoral triangle? No. In the pectineal line or the pubic eminence. The pubic eminence right over here. The pubic eminence or the pectineal line. The pectineal line or the pubic eminence is where it inserts. So that, in other words, it is not, it doesn't come down. And it may or may not be present in everyone. In about 60% of the people is always there. And the rest of the population, it is not there. And so then the only muscle that is left is the iliacus. Only muscle that is left is the iliacus. And so here you have the iliacus. I'm going to put all the muscles on this side. So I have the others, the nerves and the things I can use on the other side, right here. So you have all the muscles in the posterior abdominal wall. You can see, yes. Megan. It just works right along with the psoas major when it is present. It is not rotating because it has the same origin from, you know, the vertebral bodies of T12 and L1. Doesn't go farther in terms of its attachment. That means, see here, as you can see here, and so you see it only from T12 and L1 and coming all the way, you know, down there. And it's what do you call, actions are, if you have that sheet, its actions are given, but it is working when, you know, right along with what do you call your psoas major, you know, muscle there. Yeah. Quartatus lumborum origins and insertions. I don't know origins and insertions by heart. Okay. One of the things I would say, quartatus lumborum was on the exam, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Quartatus lumborum. Does it have origin? As you look at the origin, what is the origin insertion here? Iliac crest. And what is the origin there? 12th rib. It has origin from the 12th rib. I don't remember all the origins insertions, but even when I don't remember, what did I do? I just looked at it. It showed me that it has origin from the 12th rib, and it showed me that it has insertion to the iliac crest. And wasn't that on the dissection lab exam? No? Something like that was there, or attachment. Attachment was there. Okay, and the other thing here, if you have this printed sheet, which I don't have here, that shows you the origins and insertions. Do you have that printed sheet? Yeah. That printed sheet shows you, along with the diagram, all the numbers and all the origins and insertions, and 2.14, fifth edition table, also shows you. And the, since you asked me the origin and the insertion and the action of these muscles, what are the innovations? What are the innovations? Pardon me? As you look at this one here, what do you call the psoas major here? Let's go here and let's look at the nerves of the posterior abdominal wall here. What nerve do you see here? Okay. That's not the nerve. So here. All right. So here. Okay, what nerve do you have here? I'm going to go over the nerves pretty soon, but just for the innervation of these muscles. So what innervation would you give to the psoas major muscle? What innervation do you have?
T12 and L1.
L1, L2.
This is not T12?
Pardon me?
Is T12 not part of it?
T12 is not innervating. T12 is not innervating psoas major. It is from the lumbar plexus. Lumbar plexus L1, L2, L3, but not from the entire lumbar plexus. That is, you know, here you have that T12 is the subcostal, as you can see where the T12 is going. See here, this that is subcostal, okay? And so here you have L1, 2, 3. But you say here L1, L2, L3. You're not saying, the entire, what you call the femoral nerve. That's why I'm pointing that out, because it's coming out before it is forming, from the spinal nerves. You know, before it forms the lumbar plexus, it is innervating some of these muscles that are, right over, here. And so you have, some of these muscles as you look at it, the innervations, the origins, and the actions. You are going to be looking at each of these in that sheet or in 2.14, the table, okay? And then after the muscles, let me see. After the muscles, we have here the fascia, the muscles, the nerves. We come to the, before coming to the nerves, a quick review of the diaphragm, because the diaphragm is shown here. That means the origin of the diaphragm. You've seen the posterior abdominal wall. You've dissected the posterior abdominal wall, haven't you? You've dissected the posterior abdominal wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you have seen, you have gone and looked at all the nerves. So it's going to be just a quick review. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so let's go to the diaphragm. Quick. What's the origin of the diaphragm? What's the insertion of the diaphragm? Insertion of the diaphragm. Central tendon. Central tendon. Central tendon of the diaphragm. Okay. And so as you can see, central tendon. But the origin, what's the origin of the diaphragm? From the entire circumference of the thoracic wall. Diaphragm has origin from the entire circumference of the thoracic wall. Quick review only, as you look at it from the sternum in front, and associate the what do you call the lower six costal cartilages. Lower six costal cartilages on the side, and the corresponding ribs, and then when you come into the lateral region here you have your medial and lateral arcuate ligaments, and then posteriorly, as you look at it here, you have the origin from the lumbar vertebral bodies, and the intervertebral discs. And so it has, origin from the entire, circumference of the thoracic wall, and also, from the posterior abdominal wall. And also, since we are finishing up the diaphragm with its origins, I'd like you to understand what structures are passing through which foramina or which opening in the diaphragm, because this is the last time we will be looking at the diaphragm. And so how do some of these little things, already the IVC, the thoracic aorta, and all those things going, but how does the the thoracic duct, the acellulous vein, the vagus nerves, how do these structures mass from the abdomen to the thorax and from the thorax into the abdomen. How do these structures pass through? Which apertures do they pass through? Because this posterior abdominal wall, we are not still done with the posterior abdominal wall before the midterms. That means this can be on the final exam also. So, how does the thoracic duct get into the thoracic duct should be green. So, how does it get into the thoracic, you know, cavity, thoracic duct? Through which orifice? Through which orifice does it go? Which one? I can't hear you because they are all speaking. The aortic. Great! Who was that? I didn't see your face. Okay, good. All right, Cassandra. Okay. And aortic orifice. How does the esophagus vein get into the thorax? The same orifice? Great. Okay, so you know that. All right. So because you have done the dissection, so how do the vagus nerves or the vagal trunks, the right and left vagus nerves, that means the anterior and posterior vagal trunks, how do they get into the abdomen? Esophageal. So right here, so as you look at the esophagus is here, so here, right here, on the front and on the back, that means anterior and posterior, all right? You know, orifices. And how do the splanchnic nerves, thoracoabdominal or thoracic splanchnic nerves, the greater, the lesser, the least, how do they get, you know, into the abdomen? Under the medial arcuate. Good, you have the diagrams there. So why did you call out, you know, the origins when she was asking. And so here, so right under your medial arcuate ligament, the medial arcuate ligament, you have the greater, the lesser, the least splanchnic nerves, you know, coming out. And IVC, you remember the vertebral level, so I don't have to go there, isn't it? IVC, what vertebral level does it pass through? Right here you have the IVC, H, so right here, so you have the IVCs right here, okay? And so you have a pretty good idea about, you know, what is passing through which orifice and how does the diaphragm, the structures of the diaphragm, you know, insert into, and how does the diaphragm sit there and from where do they have, you know, where does it have origin from, which parts, because it has origin from several, you know, parts. And how about the superior epigastric arteries? Superior epigastric arteries, right and left, superior epigastric artery, branch of the internal thoracic coming and branching your musculophrenic, superior epigastric, how do they get into the abdomen to come into the rectus sheath? Remember, superior and inferior epigastric vessels are contents of the rectus sheath. How do they come there? The superior epigastric arteries, how do they come into the abdomen? Yeah, through this steno, you know, costal, see here. Both sides, on the right side and on the left side. Sternocostal opening. So we have that here, sternocostal opening. And so there you have, this is, you know, the part, you know, for your, what do you call your superior, you know, epigastric arteries is marked here for the nerves. And so that is roughly, you know, the final discussion on the diaphragm, okay? So then we can move on. Can I move on to the next item we have? That means here, the diaphragm, quick review, nerves of the posterior abdominal wall, okay? When we come to look at the nerves of the posterior abdominal wall, there are a few things. You think you have, we have done everything about the nerves so far, you would think. Let's take a look at the nerves in the posterior abdominal wall. And as we come into the posterior abdominal wall, we have somatic nerves and autonomic nerves. Somatic nerves and autonomic nerves. Okay? Which are the somatic nerves? Which are the somatic nerves? Somatic nerves here, as you look at it, subcostal. Subcostal nerve is a somatic nerve here. Let's go here, make it less crowded. Here you have the subcostal. Subcostal is coming, and the 12th nerve subcostal, instead of going here to the source major, where is it going, subcostal? Is it sensory, motor, or both, or what? Both. It has sensory and motor, or the motor fiber is going to, subcostal, motor fiber is going to. Where is it going to? Motor fibers, T12. I don't know lateral abdominal wall muscles. Remember, 7 to 12 or 7 to 11 and subcostal, anterolateral abdominal wall muscles, and you also have the sensory, you know, to the same anterolateral, you know, abdominal wall you have, and that is the subcostal nerve. Subcostal nerve. That's one of the somatic nerves. And then when you look at the rest of the somatic nerves, what do we have here? The lumbar. Plexus of nerves, but before going to the plexus, lumbar spinal nerves. How many lumbar spinal nerves are there? How many? Five lumbar spinal nerves. Remember, one spinal nerve under each of the vertebrae, L1 to L5. So there are five lumbar spinal nerves. Do you have a question or you are just exercising your hand? Okay, all right. And so when you look at L1, L2, L3, L4, L5, let's go there and spend a little time. Okay, and as you have already heard from the first quarter about the lumbar plexus of nerves, what or which spinal nerves are forming the lumbar plexus of nerves? The lumbar plexus of nerves is formed by what? L1, 2? Everybody agrees L1, 2, L4? Okay, there's no 5 there, okay? There's no L5 there. So L1, 2, L4, ventral primary rami, it forms your lumbar plexus of nerves. That you already know. It's just a, you know, just a, you know, review, okay? And then, so that is the ventral primary rami of L1 to L4. What happens to the dorsal ramus? What happened to the dorsal ramus? You may remember from some of your readings or discussions or something like that when you have a spinal nerve, it divides and it has a ventral ramus and a dorsal ramus. Okay, so I'll take you through each of these, but let's go here. So we have a cross section of the spinal cord, okay, and that's the dorsal root. And that's the ventral root. And so here it has come. The dorsal root ganglion. And so these two have come and formed a spinal nerve. Okay? So here is the spinal nerve, right here. This little segment is the spinal nerve. Okay, now after it is formed, it divides into your ventral. This one is not writing as well. I thought, okay, good. This will write here. Okay, here. See? So here you have a ventral ramus and we have a dorsal ramus here. Okay, so the lumbar nerves that we're talking about now, the ventral ramus right here, that is coming and forming, L1 to L4, forming your lumbar plexus. So what's happening to the dorsal ramus here? The DR, dorsal ramus. So what is happening to the dorsal ramus of the lumbar spinal nerves? Where do you think they will go? What would you assign to these dorsal rami, plural, of the lumbar spinal nerves? Think.
Will
go to the back. They are dorsal. They will go to the back. Along with what? What will they be traveling with? The dorsal branches or the posterior branches of the lumbar arteries. The lumbar arteries. When we do the abdominal aorta, we will see that there are lumbar arteries. Four or five of them at least. Lumbar arteries. So the branches of the lumbar arteries and the dorsal rami of L1, 2, 3, 4, 5 will be traveling to the posterior side, that means to the back muscles. So the ventral rami came and L1, 2, L4, they formed, you know, the plexus. So that means when you talk about the lumbar spinal nerves, the ventral primary rami of the lumbar spinal nerves, 1 to 4 are forming your lumbar plexus. And the dorsal rami, I see some people are, you know, kind of getting impatient. Am I slow or this is something you don't want me to talk about? Yes or no?
Yes.
Talk?
Yes.
Okay. And so the dorsal rami are going to the back. Okay, so that is how the dorsal rami are done. And the ventral rami, yes, Liat?
Which spinal nerves are going?
What did you say?
What spinal nerves?
Lumbar spinal nerves.
One to five.
Okay, I didn't quite understand the whole question. Oh, I only heard the spinal nerves. Okay. Yes, L1 to L5, dorsal rami. No, ventral, the spinal nerves, lumbar spinal nerves are five of them. Okay? And all five of them have divided into a dorsal ramus and ventral rami. And I'm talking about the ventral rami of only 1 to 4. Okay? The fifth ventral ramus, we will give it someplace else. But it is not in the lumbar plexus. It's not in. Yes. 1 to 5 for both. Both are divisions. Okay. And so, and then we come and see that the fifth is remaining. When I take you through the all the branches, you will see that ventral primary ramus of L5. Where have you seen the ventral primary ramus of L5? Do you remember L5? The lumbosacral trunk. The lumbosacral trunk. Have you seen the lumbosacral trunk in this section? Yeah, lumbosacral. Yes and no, I heard. Charles has seen it, and that is some of the others haven't seen it. Lumbosacral trunk is here. Lumbosacral trunk, let me put this diagram back on. And, right here. And this diagram, this side here is going to be the nerves right here. So as you look at it here, you would see, now I'm going to take you through the ventral primary rami off, and all these, you know, off the lumbar nerves right here. Lumbar nerves for L1, 2, L5, okay? And so as you look at this one here, let's go, the L1, we said it already forms your lumbar, what do you call lumbar plexus? In addition, when you look at it from that lumbar plexus, you have a nerve coming out. Even though it is forming the lumbar plexus has branches. Okay? One of them is that L1. Called what? What would you call the L1 here?
Hypogastric.
Okay? Iliohypogastric, and that is here. Okay, so right here. Iliohypogastric, what does it do? Is it sensory, motor, or both? Does it contain sensory fibers, motor fibers, or only both? Only one?
Both.
Okay, where do they go? The iliohypogastric, L1, it contains L1, ventroprimary fibers of L1. The nerve by itself is a branch of the lumbar plexus. It contains motor and sensory fibers. Where would these motor and sensory fibers go? L1. Iliohypogastric, where will they go? Motor fibers, where will they go? The anterolateral abdominal wall muscles. Which muscles? Yeah, that is right. Everything but the rectus, you know, rectus abdominis. Everything but the rectus abdominis. That means the lateral three, the anterolateral abdominal wall muscles. External oblique, internal oblique, and the transversus abdominis. External, internal oblique, and the transversus abdominis. Okay? And then we have, what do we have then? The other one, the sensory of L1. Where does the sensory of L1 go? Where will the sensory of L1 go? Lateral gluteal region. Lateral gluteal region. It's very easy for it to go. Lateral gluteal region. So that's L1. And then we come to L2. Before coming to L2, there's another one here. And we also have what is called your ilioinguinal. Iliohypogastric we have done. Ilioinguinal. Also L1. Ilioinguinal. Also L1. So where does that go? Is it sensory motor?
Both.
Ilioinguinal. Where will that go, ilioinguinal? Also to the those three same muscles, external, internal, transversus abdominis, you know, muscles. And where will the ilioinguinal, where will the sensory go? Sensory, ilioinguinal. To the skin of the groin, to the scrotum, and the labia majora. Labia majora, skin of the scrotum, and the groin, sensory. Okay, and then we have in green color, we have L2 and L3 here called the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve. You'll be laughing at me for asking what it does. I know you'll be laughing. Lateral femoral cutaneous, L2 and L3, lateral femoral cutaneous. Still, some people made a mistake on the dissection lab exam. That's why I'm asking. Where does the lateral femoral cutaneous go? Lateral femoral cutaneous. It tells you exactly what it does. You don't have to even think. Lateral femoral cutaneous. Lateral aspect of the thigh. Lateral cutaneous innervation. Is that a motor nerve, sensory nerve? What is it? It's a sensory, lateral. You know, femoral, cutaneous. It tells you everything. Okay, that's how I would tell you. Then genitofemoral in purple color, genitofemoral. So here, genitofemoral has two branches. That's what's called genitofemoral. I'm going to bring its branches here like that down so you can see that. Genitofemoral is L1 and L2. Genitofemoral. So, where do you think the genitofemoral will be going to? Is it sensory and motor or only what? What?
Both, sensory and motor. Sensory goes to where? Scrotum and genitalia. I mean, the small parts, you know, so you just don't say the lateral part, under surface, you don't say like that, the scrotum, because, you know, it is coming, it contains also L1. So it goes, sensory goes to the scrotum and to genitalia and a little bit into the femoral triangle also, How about genitofemoral, you know, is how about the motor aspect? Motor aspect of it. Cremastric muscle. Motor aspect goes to the cremastric muscle. When we do the scrotal sac and scrotum and all that, we will go over the cremastric muscle, but not right now. So this also goes to the cremastric muscle. Okay. Cremastric muscle. Okay. So now we have come to L1, to L2, and L3. And then, so that is your, you know, some of the branches that you have not heard of before, I mean, until you dissected, okay? But then there are other branches to the lumbar plexus. Those branches you already know of. Brendan. The medial thigh, genitofemoral, or
the
cutaneous innervation of the
adductor.
The adductor part, that is the obturator nerve that is coming, you know, about a little bit above the knee on the medial aspect. Cutaneous innervation is via the obturator nerve, and the genitofemoral, you know, doesn't go down that far. Yeah, it comes, but not that far. It doesn't, you know, come down. And where's the other one? Oh, where am I with the other one? Oh, L4 and L5. Liat was asking me about the L5 ventral primary ramus. L5 ventral primary ramus comes in this one here, in your lumbosacral trunk. Lumbosacral trunk. As you look at it here, the purple color, or I can put it here, this clear side here. This is the lumbosacral trunk. Here it has the ventral primary ramus of L4 and L5 both. So then L5 ventral primary ramus has come here. Okay, so it is made use of here. And what does the lumbosacral trunk do? Lumbosacral trunk, what does it do? What is its function? It connects. That is all it's doing, it's connecting. Here is the lumbosacral trunk in your diagram. Here is L4, here's L5. So together here, and here is the lumbosacral trunk connecting the lumbar, you know, plexus with the sacral plexus, connecting the lumbar plexus with the sacral plexus. And then the lumbar plexus that we see here has two other branches that you already know of. I mentioned them, but I don't think I have to go there. That means your femoral nerve and your obturator nerve. Femoral nerve and your obturator nerve. So they are not giving any different or new innovations that we have already studied in the first quarter. And because I can see when I look into the class, you know, so a lot of people know this is, and so people are not too keen on, you know, listening. So I can see that. Unless, you know, what is the femoral nerve doing? What are the structures that are innervated by the femoral nerve? The quadriceps extensors, this is just a first quarter material, and anything else, quadriceps extensors and innervation, what's the sensory innervation? Medial part of the thigh, and it's coming from L2, coming starting from L2, okay, middle part of the thigh. And any other, you know, muscles, any other muscles that you know of? Iliacus and psoas. Iliacus and psoas, remember psoas by, you know, L1, L2, L3, you know, before it comes. And the other one is obturator. Obturator, L2, L3, L4. Obturator, L2, L3. And you know the adductor muscles. It goes to the adductor muscles and it's sensory innervation to, as I was answering Brendan, you know, to the skin a little bit, you know, or the medial aspect, a little above the knee. It has sensory. So the how does this the lumbar plexus come out? Did you see the lumbar plexus in the substance of the psoas major muscle? That is where, if you are interested in seeing the lumbar plexus, how it is coming out, this is why we don't go over it. It's because you really have to, you know, dig through. You have to dig through the psoas major muscle, because that is really in the substance of the psoas major muscle, the lumbar plexus. So what you're seeing in the, even in the posterior abdominal wall, are only the branches. You're seeing only the branches of the lumbar plexus. And so that is the, that is your, what you call the somatic nerves in the abdomen. Okay, now I see, it's not quiet, I thought, you know, time for the break, but I see some people getting up and going. But, yes? What? So, we have autonomic fibers also, autonomic nerves also. You may remember here, as you look at it here, lumbar plexus of nerves, iliohepigastric, all its branches, we have gone over the lumbar plexus. Now what we have left as nerves in the posterior abdominal wall is your autonomic nerves. And you may think, what can we do now about autonomic nerves? Haven't we, you know, discussed everything about the autonomic nerves? Yes, we have. Just like this one, if you like, I can summarize and go, you know, with the autonomic nerves in the... I like to do that. The reason is still some people are not quite, you know, clear about the autonomics in the abdomen. I will not take you back through some of the things we have already done. So don't worry about it, okay? And so the autonomic nerves of the posterior abdominal wall, when we come to do the autonomics of the posterior abdominal wall, what do we have? What do we have? Just let's list and review and move. Autonomics in the posterior abdominal wall, what do we have? Vagus nerves you have, and what else? Splanchnic nerves. Splanchnic nerves, both. Now pay attention here. Splanchnic nerves, both parasympathetic and sympathetic splanchnic nerves. Because we have talked about only the splanchnic nerves that were the sympathetics. So when we come into the abdomen, we have one set of splanchnic nerves, you know, that are parasympathetic, that are, you know, parasympathetic, okay? So splanchnic nerves are both parasympathetic and sympathetic in the abdomen, in the abdomen. Now what else do you, can you tell me about the splanchnic nerves? What type of nerve fibers, any of the splanchnic nerves, that means sympathetic and parasympathetic splanchnic nerves, what type of nerve fibers are found in the splanchnic nerves? I mean, yeah, postganglionic or preganglionic, which ones? Preganglionic. All of them, all the splanchnic nerves are preganglionics, okay? And then we have, of course, you have seen the sympathetic chain ganglia. Now, what I'm talking about is, why am I mentioning this again? What, you know, autonomics do you have in the posterior abdominal wall? That is where I'm including, you know, the, what is called paravertebral chain ganglia, okay? And paravertebral chain ganglia, and we have already talked about the, what is called your splanchnic nerves. We have already talked about the vagus nerves. Yes, Matt?
Just wondering what you call a splanchnic nerve when it's postganglionic.
what would we call these pramilicas that are postganglionics?
Yeah. You just said they're all preganglionic.
Yeah, the splenic nerves contain preganglionic fibers.
And then what do you call them when they're postganglionic?
When they are postganglionic fibers, but they are not splenic nerves. Okay. So the question was, what would you call the splenic nerves that are postganglionics? So what happens is the preganglionic, that means your, say for example, your greater splenic nerve, when it comes contacting preganglionic fibers. And when they come to the celiac plexus, they synapse in the celiac plexus. And then those fibers that were in the greater splenic nerve have terminated. They are no more. Now, what's coming as postganglionic is the axons of those neurons that are in the celiac, you know, ganglia. So they are the fibers that are coming out from the celiac plexus. When they come out from the celiac plexus, we can now start calling them periarterial if they are lying on the blood vessels. You can call them periarterial if they are lying and traveling right on the blood vessels. Okay, so here, let's see, this one is not showing any that are traveling. This one should show. Okay, open up. When that opens up, you can see some of them are traveling. So here, okay. Okay, here. From the celiac plexus or any of these plexuses, see from here, see here, as they're coming, lying right on these blood vessels, these ones, those nerves that are postganglionic, if they have synapsed in this ganglia, they are now, because they are lying on the blood vessels, you call them periarterial plexuses or periarterial nerves, depending upon what they are. Periarterial. Periarterial plexuses or periarterial nerves. Those are, you can see, postganglionic. Okay? And so as you look at it, this is the periarterial nerve. See? Periarterial nerve. Okay. On the other hand, this one is the periarterial plexus. This one is also periarterial plexus. Alright. And so that is the other component of the autonomics in the abdomen. That means you have the vagus nerves, the splenic nerves, and you have the both parasympathetic and sympathetic, you know, splenics. And then, of course, you have the sympathetic chain ganglia that you know of here. And then, you know, we have what is called a periarterial, you know, fibers, because periarterial fibers will include both periarterial nerves and periarterial plexuses. And then there's also one other set of ganglia that are there that are your, what are they? Jeff knows it, remember he called out the name a long while ago? Prevertebral ganglia or collateral ganglia they are called, prevertebral. So prevertebrals are prevertebral ganglia and or plexuses. Prevertebral ganglia or plexuses are examples: celiac, superior mesenteric, inferior mesenteric, superior epigastric, your inferior epigastric. Superior epigastric is here, right and left inferior epigastrics, and so intermesenteric plexuses and ganglia. So sometimes people have the doubt about what is the difference between the ganglia and the plexus. Ganglia is plural. It contains, you know, each ganglion contains, you know, neurons in them. But when you have celiac plexus here, celiac plexus means it contains the ganglia as well as the nerve fibers that are coming there and that are going there. So you have the plexus, ganglia, plus you have the intermingling of the nerve, you know, plexuses there. That's why we call it celiac plexus, okay? And so that is what you would find in the abdomen. The, what you call the autonomics in the abdomen include all these things that I have, you know, talked about. Now, there's only one more, you know, thing about this. When we talk about these splanchnic nerves, there are different sets of splanchnic nerves that, let me write it down. That means here we have the, you know a lot of them already, but let's write them down so that there's no confusion about them. Here, you already know about the thoraco or thoracic, okay? Thoracic splanchnic nerves, those are sympathetics, okay? And then, you know, here you have the lumbar splanchnic nerves. They are also sympathetics. And you then have the sacral splanchnic nerves. They are also sympathetics. Then you have the pelvic splanchnic nerves. They are parasympathetic. They are parasympathetic. So the pelvic splanchnic nerves that are parasympathetics will have the spinal roots. What spinal roots will the pelvic splanchnic nerves have? S2, 3, 4. Good for you. S2, S3, S4. How did he decide that it's S2, S3, S4? Because of the sacral outflow that belongs to the parasympathetics. Sacral outflow that belongs to the parasympathetics. If that is the case, for the sacral and the lumbar splanchnic nerves of the sympathetics, sacral and lumbar, say let's put lumbar splanchnic nerves, what spinal roots would you assign it to? L1, L2, okay? She mouthed it off, even though she could have said it, because mouthing is when you don't want to hear the voice, like when you want to really utter some four-letter words or something, you see. Then you don't want, then you want to mouth it, then you can deny, you see. And so L1 and L2. And what spinal roots would you assign to lumbar splanchnic nerves? L1, L2. Good. What spinal roots would you assign to thoracic splanchnic nerves? T5, T12. Great, you guys know this, okay? So I don't have to really worry about it, you know it already. So that is all the splanchnic nerves. And you already know what are prevertebral ganglia or plexuses, paravertebral sympathetic chain ganglia, prevertebral plexuses, examples, superior mesenteric, inferior mesenteric. Okay, so you are thorough with all this. You know this. And then, from these plexuses, prevertebral ganglion plexuses, you find both nerve fibers, the parasympathetic and sympathetic, in these prevertebral plexuses, but which ones will synapse there, which ones will not synapse there, which ones will synapse at celiac, superior mesenteric, inferior mesenteric, and superior hypogastric, which ones will synapse at all these places? Sympathetics, okay? And where will your parasympathetic synapse, where do they become postganglionic? On or near the viscera, it is innervating. Okay, that is good. I'm very pleased with, generally speaking, how much you understand. So I don't think you have any questions. Any questions on this? No? Okay, good. Then this is a place we can take a good break. That means 5 minutes, and that means we can go and finish up this, and if I have time, we can go to the descent of the testes. So the question of abdominal was still there's blood vessels. And so I have to finish those, and then we can go to the descent of the testes and the ovaries. Okay, hi Katie. 3, why?
Thank you. they are plenty learning that they are looking for something.
Thank you.
Abdominal wall. Okay. As we come to the posterior abdominal wall, I can, instead of just talking, I can talk and color with you. See, that way we can get this done in no time. Okay, so let me go to the arteries of the posterior abdominal wall. Okay, now, right here I have the arteries of the posterior abdominal wall. Now you have that diagram also. Please take your diagrams and we can color it together and all the branches you need. Yeah. Good, good. This is the one I was looking for. You have that there and let's go here. Okay, right here. What is to be done here?
It's backwards.
Pardon me?
Backwards.
It's backwards? Okay. Upside down. Okay, good. Abdominal aorta extends between what vertebral, what levels of the vertebral column? What levels of the vertebral column?
T12 to L4.
And so here we have. Here we have T12 is right here. T12 is right here. L4 is right here. Okay, and T12. And so it's lying right on the vertebral, you know, bodies. It's lying right on the vertebral bodies, and one its branches. When we look, the branches can be classified very easily according to, that means the visceral branches, that means the parietal branches, that means the terminal branches, okay? So visceral branches, when we talk about the visceral branches of the abdominal aorta, unpaired and paired visceral branches. Unpaired visceral branches, very quick, right here, you have your superior mesenteric. Okay, superior mesenteric with its branches here. You have the middle colic, the right colic, the iliocolic, and all of those. And what is the superior mesenteric, the artery of? Midgut. The superior mesenteric artery is the artery of the midgut derivatives, the artery of the midgut derivatives. And so you can see all the branches of it, and right colic, middle colic, iliocolic, the main ones. The others have lots and lots of intestinal branches, so I'm not going to take you through there. And the other visceral branches, one of them includes your inferior mesenteric. The terminal branch, of course, you know, is the superior rectal, as you, most of you have answered that on a dissection lab exam. Now, when you look at the inferior mesenteric artery, it has the left colic branch that goes up like that, left colic branch. Then it has several sigmoid arteries, and of course, and whatever arcades going on. And so then we have the celiac trunk. This is now I'm finishing all the branches even. Ciliac trunk, that has three branches. Some of you did not write that on dissection lab exams, but most of you have. And so here you have the ciliac trunk with its three branches. Your splenic, your left gastric, and your hepatic artery right here. So these three, ciliac, you know, trunk, superior mesenteric, inferior mesenteric, are the three unpaired visceral branches. Then you have paired visceral branches when you look at it. That's easy, very easy. In purple color, we have the paired visceral branches going to the viscera. These ones, the renal. The gonadals, look at it here. The right and left gonadals are coming right from the abdominal aorta, high up. So, very high up. Why is that? The gonadal branches, the slender arteries coming from very high up and go, you know, to the gonads. Why are they starting so high up here? Because of the beginning of the origin of during development, where you have your gonads developing, very close to the kidneys, very close to the kidneys in the lumbar region. And, you know, so then they come, you know, then when they slip down, the arteries extend down with them. They take the arteries with them. So the gonadal arteries, that means the ovarian and the testicular arteries, are here, right here, below the renal artery, right there. That's the renal artery right here, and the gonadals are here. Okay, so that those are your, and then you also have the middle suprarenals. Here you have the middle suprarenals, are also your, you know, visceral, you know, branches. That's it for the visceral branches, paired, unpaired. Then we have your parietal branches. Parietal going to what? What do you understand when I say parietal branches? The wall, the body wall. Parietal branches meaning paired in the body. Parietal branches in green color. You have the lumbar arteries. See here, you have lumbar arteries. Here you have the four pairs of lumbar arteries. Okay, now these lumbar arteries, paired, you know, parietal arteries, four or five pairs of lumbar arteries, these lumbar arteries, what they do is they branch like that. Their posterior branch or dorsal branch go to the back, right along with which nerves? The dorsal rami of lumbar nerves, the posterior branch of the lumbar nerves go to the back. And when you look at it here, you can see that right here. Let's look at these veins right here. You can see some of the veins here, okay? You can see the lumbar veins much better than the lumbar arteries. From where are the lumbar arteries taking origin? Which part of the abdominal aorta? Have you seen the lumbar arteries in your dissection? No, because you have to kind of roll, you have to kind of move and roll the abdominal aorta to see, because it's taking origin from the back of the abdominal aorta. It's taking origin from the back of the abdominal aorta, and you really need, oh yeah, you can see them on this abdominal aorta, you know, thing here. Let's take this one here, and you can see the lumbar arteries. You can see, not that one. See, you can see that one, and there are, you know, there is, you know, that is the kidneys right there. There are a few lumbar arteries, just like this one that you see. This is not a lumbar artery, but I'm using that as an example. So lumbar arteries come out and they branch. The posterior branches go to the back, you know, some of the back muscles. Anterior branches of the lumbar arteries are supplying posterior abdominal wall muscles. The posterior abdominal wall muscles, your psoas and your, you know, and the like. And then the parietal branches, again, we have your inferior phrenic is also inferior phrenic here, because the diaphragm is many times considered as part of the wall, body wall, part of the body wall. So that is where the inferior phrenic is, you know, included there. And so that is the parietal branches, the visceral branches. Then we have the terminal branches. That's it for the abdominal aorta. Terminal branches, yes. What did you say?
What was the last artery you said that was parietal?
Parietal inferior phrenic. Inferior phrenic, there are two of them. You have that diagram. When I'm coloring something, it's a good idea to have the diagram. The coloring packet was given out in the class, and I may still have some on my cart here. See, when I'm coloring it from this distance, people who are sitting at the back may not be able to see what I'm coloring. And this classroom has a lot of room for people to move about. That means to come. And also, it's up to you to get what coloring packet that you like, because I don't know who wants it and who doesn't want it. This one would have it. Yes. And then I can see when I look at people, I can see when they're lost. And so when I see that in their faces, I stop and then I say, what is going on here? And so I saw that right here, where was I? Now there's only one group of branches left, terminal. Terminal branches. How many terminal branches of the abdominal aorta would you have? Three. No. Alex Pintois, right on the dot, right there. He showed me three. Right like that. Three green branches he showed me. Okay. And the right and left familiacs. And your median sacrum. Even though that median sacrum is a flimsy little thing, but median sacrum is also considered to be a terminal branch. And you may remember, for the sake of finishing up, the common iliac arteries, right and left, what do they do? What have you seen? Branch into? External iliac and? Internal iliac. Internal iliac we will be revisiting. We haven't visited it yet. We will be visiting the internal iliac in the pelvis, because most of the arterial supply to pelvic viscera is accomplished by the internal iliac. And then here, it's a good one. Lumbar arteries and everything. You can see, let's take the cluttering off here. Okay, here you can see that is the median sacrum, and that is your internal iliac, all the branches coming out here. External iliac, what have you seen of the external iliac? What does it become? Femoral. When and where does it become femoral? When would you call it, huh? Below the inguinal ligament, the femoral artery the external iliac artery has become the femoral artery. That is very good. And so one thing about here, two clinical things. One of them is here, at about the level of that L4 vertebra, in children and in thin adults, you can exert pressure, backward pressure, at the level of L4 vertebra, and you can, you know, compress the abdominal aorta, you know, to reduce or to prevent hemorrhaging or bleeding in the lower extremity as well as in the pelvis. That is number one. Number two, you can also have aneurysms, abdominal aneurysm. That means the aortic aneurysm is more common in the abdomen than any place else. Abdominal aneurysm, that means aortic aneurysm is very common in the abdomen. And have you seen any, any aneurysms in the cadavers? Any cadaver has any aneurysms? Now this year you are very lucky, you have lots of pathology. I have seen what you call cirrhosis of the liver, and there are, you know, few things I've seen when I was there, you know, last Friday. Okay, so I'm done with the arteries. Yes. Children and thin adults. Thin adults, you know, you can accept pressure. Yeah. Because people who are chubby, there's a lot more fat. You know, especially in that region, you've seen the great tormentum. You know, where does the great tormentum collect all the fat? You know, it's hanging about from here to here. You know, so here. From the front. Yes, from the front. Pressure, you know, the question was, is the pressure accepting? Yes, you accept pressure from about the level of L4 from the front. From the front. And not when the person is standing, okay? And standing, everything is hanging down. And so it's easy if the person is laying down. You know, you can easily accept pressure. There was a hand someplace up here. Then I'll come to you. Yeah.
And that decreases bleeding the pelvis.
And the lower or lower extremities. Decreasing bleeding by accepting pressure there, okay? And, yeah?
You said something else in the clinical thing after that.
There's only one clinical thing I haven't said that I should have said a while ago. Then I thought when I end, I will say it. But since you asked, I will say that another clinical thing that I wanted to take you guys through was, now I'm not jumping around. I have my head straight screwed on here, and I'm just going to go with another clinical thing that is related to the psoas major muscle. I mentioned part of it. Remember, if you have any abdominal visceral involvement, pancreas, kidneys, any of, you know, those cecum, you know, appendix, you know, appendicitis, any of those movement of the psoas major muscle will let you, you know, the pain will increase, okay? Psoas major muscle. That was one thing. The other thing was the psoas abscess. I forgot to mention at that time was psoas abscess is another thing. It is something that it is good for physicians to have heard, so then you can look for it if your one of your patients comes with that. There is a psoas abscess. Psoas abscess, as you look at the psoas major muscle here, yeah, you can see even though the blood vessels are here, you can still see here. Okay. Now, people have written and seen here if you have what you call tuberculosis of, you know, any of the lumbar structures, that means you can have what you call the vertebrae, tuberculosis of the vertebrae, lumbar vertebrae, or you can have any of the structures here, tubercular abscesses, or any of the inflammation in this region, if it forms, it can form. Remember, it is retroperitoneal. Okay, so it is not with the peritoneal inflammation, retroperitoneal. The abscess can form right here on the psoas major muscle and right under the fascia of the psoas major muscle. That abscess and its exudate can travel down, lying right on, when it comes here, the fascia iliaca, that means coming right on, slipping right on that fascia iliaca, that means right, you know, through the two layers of your femoral sheath. It can come as, and you can feel as a lump in the femoral triangle. In the femoral triangle, you can feel that as a lump. That is called a psoas abscess. Psoas abscess, that something, some pathology have taken place here, and that, you know, the exudate can travel right down here, and you may be able to feel that as a lump. Remember your saphenous varix? Just like the saphenous varix, you may feel as a lump in the femoral triangle. That can also be, one of the things can also be your, this one, the psoas abscess. That was the only clinical thing that I... Other than that, there are not too many, you know, clinical things, you know, related to this. And that brings me to the... Now, we are doing the blood vessels, and that means the... Okay, the visceral branches, parietal branches, terminal branches, I've done all those. Venous return. Venous return, again, here we have the inferior vena cava. You may remember a few things about, you know, the inferior vena cava. And one of the things about the inferior vena cava is that the where does it begin and what are the forming structures meaning forming vessels, and what are the tributaries, and how about the valves, and so here when you look at the inferior vena cava, at what vertebral level does it form? L5. So this is about the level of L5. Okay, L5. And of course, what are the forming? Median sacral is still there, and so your right and left common iliacs. Right and left common iliacs, you know, uniting together. And so then, here we have, as you look at it, there are, of course, very similar to the branches of the abdominal aorta, you have here, as you look at it here, you have your visceral branches. What are these visceral branches? These ones here. Hepatics, yes. Hepatics, 2 or 3. And then when you have the renals, you know, I haven't seen only one renal, I've always two. I have always seen 2 renal vessels. And then the gonadal. The right gonadal comes into the IVC. What happens to the left gonadal? Here is the left gonadal. Left ovarian or left gonadal, I mean left testicular or left ovarian, that is this one, is going to the left renal. And what else goes to the left renal? Suprarenal. Here you have the suprarenal, you know, is, you know, coming into the left renal, and all the lumbar veins right here, you can see the lumbar veins, and you can really see even the tributaries of the lumbar veins, you know, right here. Lumbar veins are all coming in here. And what do you know about these tributaries of the lumbar veins that are just, you know, these tributaries when they're coming in this region? Yes, you know, the anastomosis. Remember, back of the colon, with the back of the colon, you have the anastomosis taking place with the lumbar veins. And let me see what else. And what is specific about the inferior vena cava is it has no valves. It has no valves. So, you know, that is how, when you have, what do you call your... these ones, overflow. When you have overflow, that means when you have collateral venous drainage via your this one, and the portal, you know, circulation, collaterals can go into the inferior, you know, vena cava. So, which below the diaphragm, the venous blood in the IVC is coming from what regions and or structures? Below the diaphragm. Below the diaphragm? The lower extremities? A lot of the, you know, abdominal viscera, but not all. Okay, except with the exception of your, the portal circulation. That means your stomach, the spleen, you know, the pancreas, the small intestine, large intestine, all those. But how about the pelvic, you know, some of the pelvic viscera, the uterus, the urinary bladder, the kidneys, all these are going into the
IVC, into the IVC. And let me see, lumbar veins, they are all, you know, going into the IVC. And so that is what is called your, all the tributaries of the inferior vena cava, okay? And so that is the arteries, and then inferior vena cava, okay, and the lymphatics of the abdomen. As you look at the lymphatics of the abdomen, you have the lymph vessels that we have here. And let me see the lymphatics. Okay. Lymphatics of the abdomen. There are lots of, lymph, vessels that we have here. But when you look at the lymph, we are looking at, open up. Okay. When it opens up, we can see that the lymph that we have there is aortic nodes. They receive from the posterior abdominal wall. Let's go here. Okay, here. Aortic nodes. All along here, these are all here, not that. So here you have, the aortic nodes. But when you look at these aortic nodes, and you might have seen there are a lot more lymph nodes than what you think are there, isn't it? There's a lot of them. They're coming from the kidneys. What are they draining into? What areas are going into these lymph nodes, okay? From the posterior abdominal wall, that means the kidneys. That means, the ureters. Okay, that means the urine tubes. That means the, what else? The inferior, not the inferior, the internal iliacs. So as you look at the internal iliacs, coming into the common iliac. And common iliacs, will go right into the inferior mesenteric, or from there to the superior mesenteric, and ultimately going into your cisterna chyli, or cistern, chyle cistern, these days they're calling it. And then, of course, to the lymph trunks. You can see the lymph trunks and things going into the cisterna chyli thoracic duct, passing through your aortic hiatus into the thorax. So, posterior abdominal wall is done 10 minutes early. And any questions you have? No? Okay. So, we can go to the next outline. And, yes, pardon me? Leave early today? Oh, the sign-up sheets. Thank you for reminding. Yes, we will leave. Let me see. Yeah, the case study sign-ups. I have to find sheets. I didn't bring any sheets I meant to. Let me see. Who has spare sheets? Has anyone got... Can you give me two spare sheets? Can you please... thanks. Yeah, good. Yeah, so we'll do the sign-up and then you can go. But I need the sign-ups. It's very important because sometimes there can be some mistakes that somebody has not, put the name, only one name was there. So, but then I checked with the list. It really helped me with the first quarter case study for two people. It helped me with the list. Yes, then we can disperse after signing. And good, thank you. So I'll see you with the descend up the testes and ovaries tomorrow. Yes, Kenneth.
Thank you. nothing.
The number.
Thank you.
no idea. I was wondering that yesterday. I saw that sign and I was like,
I heard you're being
it says explosive, so it makes me think that maybe it's diarrhea.
Kind of a